Okay, let's get those shoes on. Let's get to the start line. The 259.59 podcast, a podcast dedicated to competitive amateur runners. I'm your host, Donald Morrison, running and training in Pasadena, California. We're back for episode 4. I'm going to tell you about my recent half marathon race and a 10K race. What went right? What went wrong? One race went pretty well. One race, did not. So I'm going to get into that. And then I'm going to get into the Boston Marathon coming up in just about 2 weeks. I will be there lining up in Hopkinton. Hopefully I'll end up on Boylston Street. We'll see. And going to try to get you guys excited about the Boston Marathon coming up. I ran it back in 2014. I'm going to tell you about my experience, kind of what to expect if you haven't done Boston before. And then I'm going to get into all the crazy things we do as competitive, serious runners to get our mileage in. That includes waking up at god-awful hours. So anyway, let's just get right into it. Why waste time, right? So let's start with the recap of a recent half marathon I ran. It was March 6th on Sunday. It was the Redlands Half Marathon in Redlands, California. For those of you who are thinking, where is Redlands? Well, if you're not from Southern California, Redlands is about 60 to 70 miles east of Los Angeles. I'm here in Pasadena. It's about an hour east in San Bernardino County, next to San Bernardino. If you are familiar with Ontario Airport, it's probably maybe 20, 25 minutes away from Ontario East. So Redlands, great half marathon. I picked it for a reason. So I had a couple choices of half marathons that I was considering running. I was thinking about doing the Rock and Roll Marathon a week before the end of February in Las Vegas. That's the one that's on the Strip. I ran that race back in 2014, but I did the full marathon, which I did okay. Could have done better. But anyway, so I thought, well, I could do that one. But then logistically, I would have had to have gotten to Las Vegas on Saturday. The race would be on Sunday. They don't let you pick up your bib on Sunday. I said, well, you know, my wife isn't going to be able to go. I'd have to go by myself. I'd be there Saturday, Sunday, maybe leave Monday or Tuesday. I just didn't want to deal with the logistics, even though I knew that it's a pretty flat race course, because you start on the Strip, you run down to the Welcome to Las Vegas sign on Las Vegas Boulevard, turn around, go through Fremont Street in downtown and come back and finish, I think, by Mirage or Caesar's Palace, one of those places. And so I thought about that, and then I thought, well, there's a half marathon in Ventura that's all downhill. You kind of start up in the hills, and then you kind of make your way down to the beach. That looked like fun, but I figured, well, I am running Boston, and Boston is, while there's a lot of downhill, there are some hills, too, there. So, you know, the Newton Hills, Heartbreak Hill. I figured, well, sure, I can run a downhill half marathon, but then, you know, my time would look good, but would I be getting any training benefits? Then I saw Redlands. I saw, oh, this looks very interesting, and there's some climbing. And boy, there was a lot of climbing there. Well, so just a quick recap of the race. Pretty well organized. I really enjoyed it. The volunteers at Redlands, fantastic. Great set of volunteers. Very nice. Very helpful along the course. Because you're running in the streets of Redlands. It's a beautiful community in San Bernardino County. If you ever had a chance to go out, if you're in this area, go check out Redlands. Really, really great community. So volunteers were great. Very easy parking. You park kind of in a mall area. Very close to the start line. Plenty of porta potties. They're very relaxed with getting to the start line. You don't have to line up at the start line 15, 20 minutes before your race goes off. So where you're just kind of standing around, you can do warm ups, you know, really up until, you know, a minute before the race, really. So it was easy. They had an escort, you know, they had the motorcycle that was leading the lead runner. So it was easy. You just follow that. And like I said, volunteers on the course. You know, they closed off the streets mostly. So anyway, I ended up finishing second, which now granted, yes, I know that sounds good, and it is, and I'm happy with that. But you know, there were some competitive runners there. The winning time was 1:18 something. I ran 1:23:29, so I was way behind the winner. But I felt good, 1:23:29. For that course. Well, let me tell you about the course. The first mile is kind of a gradual uphill where you gain about 60 feet in elevation. Second mile was pretty much flat. Then from about mile 2 1/4 to about mile goodness, about eight or so, or almost eight, it's pretty much an uphill climb. And you climb about 700 to 800 feet. So that's a pretty steady climb. And the climbing was not that easy. You had some gradual hills, but then you had, some hills that were fairly steep. So I figured, wow, that's the type of race that I want to be in for Boston, because there's going to be a point in the race where I'm going to have to do some climbing. So even though I've run Boston before, I know what to expect, and I train in Pasadena where there's a lot of hilly streets and gradual ups and downs. Nonetheless, I wanted to get that simulation of running the hills in a race. And I figured, well, I know Boston doesn't have 5+ miles of climbing, 700-800 feet, but nonetheless, this is a good enough challenge for me. So I did it. It was great. Running downhill most of the last 4 or 5 miles was really nice. Although there was a point in where you had mile, I think, was it 11 to 12, where there was a bit of an uphill, which was kind of like you were running downhill for 2.5 miles, and then you go to, and you start climbing again, and you're like, God, really? This kind of sucks. But nonetheless, I made it. Felt pretty strong. Felt good about it. Thought my training leading up to the half was going well. So I was really, really pleased with my performance. And so I figured, okay, I think this is an ample enough time, about 6-7 weeks or so before Boston. So the week after the half marathon, I kind of took it easy, gave my legs some rest. Then I got back into it. So that next week, 2 weeks later, I decided, well, a last-minute decision, why don't I run the Seal Beach 10K? That's also a run that I really enjoy. I haven't run it in 8 years. The last time I ran it was 2014. I actually won the race, surprisingly enough. Ran my best 10K time ever, 34:52. That was in 2014. Let's fast forward to 2022. Completely different story. So leading up to the race on March 20th, March 19th it was actually. So leading up to that race, I had gotten, I think, sick. I thought it was allergies at first, but I think I came down with a bit of a cold. Now, I don't believe it was COVID, if you're wondering. I did take 2 at-home tests and tested negative both times. So I don't think it was COVID. No one else that I was around seemed to have gotten sick. So maybe it was allergies. Maybe it was a cold. Anyway, so that happened, I think, around, early in the week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Did not feel good. Had to get a lot of sleep from Tuesday to Wednesday. So felt good about that. And I ran through. I ran every single day that week. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So Friday afternoon, right before the online registration ended, I decided, I'm going to do an interval workout on the track anyway. I'm going to do 6x1 miles. So why don't I just do a 10K? And I like Seal Beach. I haven't done it in a long time. I can do it now. Let me just jump in at the last minute. Well, so I did that. And then I ran four miles on Friday evening. Easy, of course. I didn't feel all that great, but I thought, it's okay. Seal Beach 10K is not a goal race of mine. If I can run under 40 minutes, I'll be happy with that. I think that's probably acceptable to me. So why don't we do it? We're going to do a hard workout anyway. Let's just do a race. So woke up in the morning, a little tired. So I knew that wasn't a good sign. But I figured, well, I'll probably just wake up anyway. Kind of did my usual pre-race routine. Did some stretching, ate a little oatmeal, hydrated, had some beet juice. And beet juice, by the way, nitrates, kind of opens up your blood vessels a little bit, your capillaries anyway. So I find beet juice to be effective, but that's another topic for another day. So drove to Seal Beach, parked, did all that. And when I was warming up, I really didn't feel all that great. I felt a little sluggish, and I thought, oh boy. I don't know if this is going to go well. I'm not really feeling it right now. Well, let me keep warming up. Did some strides, just not feeling all that great, and thought, let me just kind of run at a decent pace to start the first mile or two, and then we'll go from there. So the race started, went out, wasn't feeling it at all. First mile was 6:07. So I thought, okay, well, that's not bad, but I don't feel up to this at all. So mile two comes. I start slowing down and 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 slowing down. Second mile was like 6:30. Mile three was like 6:40. Mile four was I don't even remember what mile four was. And then mile five, and this is a fairly flat course too. There's no real, I mean, there's a little bit of a gradual uphill in mile two, mile three, but nothing that's difficult. So then mile five and six, I'm at 7:06 for mile five. Mile six was 7:03. I have all these people passing me who normally just wouldn't be passing me. And I thought, you know what, this isn't happening. So I'm just going to kind of just go. I'm just going to go. And I knew by mile two, that was my attitude. When I started slowing down and people started passing me, I said, well, this just isn't my day. Let me just gut this out as best I can. Still kept getting slower and slower. Mile five, 7:06. Mile six, 7:03. I'm looking at my clock going, 7:03? What the heck is going on? This is terrible for me. So anyway, got through it, finished in 21st place. So not bad, I guess, place-wise, if you're into that. But my time, I wanted to go under 40. Would have been happy with that. Finished 41:43. What the heck? So now you have the psychological component. And I'm sure a lot of you guys have experienced really good races where you're on a high. You felt you ran really well. Hey, this is great. I'm feeling really good. But what about the flip side? When you don't feel good, when you're just gutting it out, when you're feeling sluggish, you're looking at your watch going, man, boy, my splits are terrible, but I'm going to finish this anyway. So you finish, and then you have to evaluate, because all of us competitive amateur runners always evaluate the race right when it ends. What did I do right? What did I do wrong? What happened? Was I not prepared? Was I mentally weak here? Was I just physically, did I get a cramp? What happened? For me, no, there was no cramp or anything. Physically, I ended up with finishing after the 10K, my total miles that week, that 7-day period, Sunday to Saturday, was 59 miles. So, and then which is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be around 60 anyway. So I wasn't excessive with my mileage. So I can't just say, well, my legs were worn out. That's just how it goes. No, I knew what I was dealing with, but I just wasn't into it. And I evaluated. I said, well, you know, I felt really kind of stressed, not with the race itself, of course, but just kind of life stress. And that's the thing with being amateur runners. We're not professionals. We have other things involved in our lives. We have work and family obligations and other things, social aspects. And I think I got overwhelmed because I felt like I had a lot to do. You know, I had a busy week at work, but work's usually busy. So that's just how it goes. It was busy leading up to the Redlands half. But I managed that race really well. So I thought, well, you know, okay, work was a little busy, but then I felt like I had a lot to get done that weekend. A lot of house stuff, a lot of things to do. I had to take care of this, had to take care of that. Nothing that's a big deal, but things that take time. And I think I overwhelmed myself. Oh boy, I got to get up and race, and then I got to do this, and I have to do that. And oh, I just have so many things going on. And I think mentally I overwhelmed myself. And I think that played a role in my performance. So I went home, you know, told my wife wasn't able to make it. So I told her, she said, hey, how'd you do? I'm sure you did well. I said, no, actually I bombed. I did really poorly. She goes, wow. And so I kind of explained why. And she says, well, you know, these things happen. You kind of just learn. She said, you know, because you weren't feeling well either with, you know, what was probably a cold. I said, well, I don't really want to blame the cold. I mean, I kind of got over that. Like I said, early in the week, I had some symptoms, sneezing a lot, a little bit of a runny nose, a little slight cough, but nothing major. And then that kind of subsided as the week went along. So maybe there were lingering effects of fatigue from that. I'm sure that probably played a role. But I think it was just more mentally, I was in my own head, and I think I was too stressed out. So the lesson learned here is, guys, just take a deep breath. I know we all have other obligations in our lives. We can't just focus on running. But when you do have a race coming up and you want to run well, even if it's not a goal race, just take a deep breath and just kind of manage it one day at a time. It's easier said than done, because I've been doing this for a long time and I still find myself getting stressed out. So it's a good lesson learned, but it has a bit of a happy ending, I guess, because the next day I decided, well, you know, I have my first of three 20-mile runs coming up leading up to Boston. Well, I did the 20-miler, felt very good. Actually, negative split the last 10 miles compared to the first 10. felt very strong for a 20 miler. Of course, you know, I took it easy. I wasn't going to run hard, obviously, because you don't do that for a long run, but felt great. Finished 20 miles. And, you know, and you guys know for long runs, every long run's different. Some long runs, you just feel worn out. And other long runs, yeah, you feel all right. Well, I felt pretty good after this one. I mean, of course, you know, my legs were worn, as they're going to be for a long run. But mentally, everything else physically, I felt really good. So it had an upside. And my training since then, leading up to Boston, I think has been fairly well. So I put in 63 miles the next week. And this week that just wrapped up, I was almost at 68 miles. Almost at 67, just little shy of that. And then that's it. And then the two best words coming up, taper time. Anytime you're training for a marathon, the two favorite words, taper time. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. But the training for Boston, that's an interesting thing when you're in the middle of your peak training for a marathon. Sometimes you feel like it's just a grind and you feel like you're just going through the motions. You go home, get home from work and stretch and run and then come back. And then your run takes so long because you're running 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 miles, which takes time. And then after work, for me, because my work starts at 8 a.m. So I really don't want to get up too early and run. I just don't. I've done it and I just don't want to do it every day. So I run after work. And, you know, by the time I get home and shower and do all that and eat, and then it's like, oh boy, now I got to go to bed because I have to get sleep and I'm tired. So sometimes it just feels like such a slog. And then I started, I think it was earlier, this week, I started to question, gosh, am I really going to do well in Boston? Because I just feel like I'm going through the motions. I almost feel like my heart's not all that into it. But I ran a 10-mile tempo run on Wednesday and felt really good. And my times were about what I wanted. I wanted to be around 6:30 mile pace and hit that. Yeah, I think it was a little over 6:32. But I hit it and I was really pleased with that. And then I had today I finished up a 3x5K, which was great. Ran pretty well, felt strong. And so now I'm feeling pretty good. It's amazing how each day is different. Some days you don't feel great and you're kind of questioning, am I really into this? And then the next day you surprise yourself and have a really good run, and you're like, oh, I think I still have it. So we'll see what happens. But let's get right into the Boston Marathon. And hopefully some of you guys are going to run this. You're going to fly into Boston or drive in, depending on where you live. It is the Super Bowl of marathons. Now, for you people overseas, I'm sure you guys all know the Super Bowl. Well, Super Bowl, or the World Cup of distance running. How about that? for you soccer or football fans out there. But it's the Super Bowl, but I'm here in the U.S. I call it the Super Bowl of distance running, the Boston Marathon. And all you have to say is just Boston. I'm running Boston. And everybody knows. Even people who don't run know the level where the Boston Marathon is at. They know where it ranks up there. Oh, you're running Boston. Wow. BQ, Boston Qualifier, and that's a thing everybody knows in running. Hey, have you run a BQ before? Yes, I have. Oh my gosh, are you going to run Boston? Yes, actually, I'm going to run it. Wow. That's kind of the reaction you get. You don't get that necessarily for the other majors. I mean, and London is a great marathon. You don't really get that for London. You don't get that necessarily for Berlin, Chicago. New York's a great marathon. You don't get that for New York either. You don't get, wow, you're running New York. That's amazing. I mean, you get people who are encouraging like that. But Boston, when you tell people you're running Boston, their eyes kind of light up a bit. Even people who aren't runners, because they know. Even the non-runners know. Wow, you're running Boston. That's amazing. So Boston's coming up. I've only run it once. That was back in 2014. That's when Meb Keflezighi won it, fellow UCLA Bruin. Meb Keflezighi, wonderful human being, by the way. Just a great person overall. He won it that year. That was the year I ran my second fastest marathon time, 2:49:21. And that's when I think Boston ended up being my fourth marathon that I ran. And I ran 2:49. I wanted to go under 2:50. Thought I can go under 2:50. And I did. At Boston. I remember Boston being at the start. I think the weather was very good. It wasn't ideal, but it was pretty. It was on the better side. I think it was in the upper 50s when we started, ended up in the mid 60s by the time I was done. It was mostly sunny. Great crowd. That's what really impressed me the most about Boston. And I think that's what's going to impress a lot of you people who've run it for the first time. And we're coming out of the, well, I don't want to say we're coming out of the pandemic because we're still in it, but a lot of the restrictions have eased. People feel more comfortable going out now. So I think you're going to see a really good crowd, especially since this will be the first Boston since 2019 that is run on Patriots Day. If you remember, 2020 was canceled and it was like a virtual run. And then last year's race was run, I believe, in October. So now we're kind of getting back to normal. I think that's going to excite a lot of people in the Boston area. And I think you're going to see a really good crowd. And that's what I remember in 2014. Just the crowd pretty much through most of the race. And they're loud and they're just so encouraging. And the energy just kind of drags you along in a good way. It just pulls you. I shouldn't say drag. It just pulls you. And you just find yourself running your best. And that's really amazing. And for those of you who are sports fans, whether you like, you know, football, baseball, basketball, soccer, whatever you like, hockey, you always dream as a kid of being in that stadium or on that field, in that arena with the loud crowd cheering for you. And it's just something that you've always imagined. And when you're running the Boston Marathon, you get that because that crowd noise is so loud. You feel almost like you're in a stadium where you're on that baseball field, you're on the football field or the pitch for you soccer football fans out there. It's a great experience. The loudest was running through Wellesley, and that's about a halfway point. That's where it was just, there's just this tunnel of noise. And you really felt like you were at the Super Bowl or you were at the Rose Bowl, and the crowd was just going wild for you. And that's just something I'll never forget. And then, of course, Boylston Street, and where the crowd at the finish line is absolutely incredible. It's just a great experience. If you guys are hoping to run Boston, maybe not this year, maybe next year or in 2 years, do it. If you have an opportunity to run Boston, save your money and do it. That's all I'm going to say. You will never, never regret that decision, I assure you. So Boston, you know, you start at Hopkinton, and then you run all the way to the city limits of Boston. Actually, most of the race isn't even in Boston, city limits. I think only like the last mile or mile and a half really is. You know, you run by the Citgo gas sign. You're close to Fenway Park. It's just and there aren't too many turns for Boston either. Now, the course, and a lot of people will say this, and I'm no expert because I've only run it once, it is a tricky course. And it is a course that if you're planning to run it this year, if you've never run it before, if you're a first-timer, do not go out hard. I cannot stress that enough. However, what will prevent you from going out hard is the crowd at the start. Now, I don't mean the people on the side. I mean the actual other runners. What I found was it's an easy course to really run hard in if you can, because the first half is mostly downhill. In fact, the first mile, I think, is pretty much almost all downhill. So you can really start blazing fast, and you can have a great first half marathon. I mean, you can run a PR half marathon, really, if you were able to, if you had enough room. But here's the thing. The crowd of runners, at least from my experience, I remember having to weave through a lot of people, they kind of slow you down because it's so crowded and the road isn't very wide that you find yourself kind of running slower just by default. And then you have to kind of weave through everybody, which can be a little tricky sometimes. But that's actually a good thing because it slows you down, because it's really easy with some of the downhills to go out too hard. So don't be discouraged if you feel the crowd of runners is slowing you down. It's actually a good thing because the last half of the race, you have the Newton Hills. So I think starting at mile 16 to mile 20, and you guys have heard all this, and I'm sure you've looked at the elevation maps, at least you should be. You have the Newton Hills. Coming from Pasadena and Los Angeles, where we have a lot of hills here anyway, I didn't find, hopefully I'm not jinxing myself. I didn't find the Newton Hills all that difficult, actually. But they are to be respected. And what I mean by that, you have to conserve your energy the first half, because your legs are going to respond when you go up and down these hills. And that's the tricky thing about Boston, because it's not flat. Your legs are going to deal with the downhill. Your quads are going to have to deal with the downhill, then the uphill, and then the downhill, a little bit of, it's kind of undulating, especially the first half. The first half, mostly downhill, but you get kind of an up and down, and that undulation can do a number on your legs. And then after you go up Heartbreak Hill, which I didn't find was all that bad, Heartbreak Hill, you go down, you have a pretty good descent down, and that's where you start feeling in your quads. So that's a right around mile 20. And so you got to be careful there. And then it kind of flattens out about mile 22 or so. It gets a little flatter, still a little undulating, but not as much as the first half of the race. And then you go up, and then you go make a right towards the end on what they call it's Hereford Street, but they call it Mount Hereford because it's a slight incline. But by that point, your legs are the course has done a number on your legs, and you really feel it. And then you make a left onto Boylston Street, which is flat to maybe a little slight gradual down, and then you're done. But I think the best thing to do is to, this is advice you guys already know, just take the first half easy. Don't get too excited. Even if you feel really good and you think Boston is Boston, this is the Super Bowl of marathons, I'm going to try to set a PR, great, but you have to be really smart and you have to respect the course and let the crowd of runners, let them slow you down. It starts spreading out after about 10, 11 miles or so. Then it gets easy. It starts to open up and it's easier to sort of maneuver. So yeah, I would say one of my experiences was one of the hills, one of the Newton Hills. It wasn't Heartbreak. I think it was the first or second one. I actually passed up Joan Benoit Samuelson in the race. I did. And I actually finished ahead of her. So I can actually say I beat an Olympic gold medalist, which is factually true. But there are obvious qualifications. But she still ran a great race, actually, because she still ran 250-something, because I looked up her results. Fantastic. I mean, she's a great, fantastic marathon runner. But I remember passing her up and thinking, oh my gosh, I just passed up an Olympic gold medalist. Wow. Wow. I'm passing her up. That was quite something. And that's what you get in Boston. You get experiences like that. Not always passing up Olympic gold medalists, but you get to see famous people like Joan Benoit Samuelson, and just so much tradition there. Just a wonderful experience. And when they put the medal around you, it's wow. I mean, you feel like you made it, and you get very emotional. I know I did when I crossed the finish line. I just felt, wow, I can't believe I actually did this. I never thought I would run the Boston Marathon, and here I am at the finish line. This is amazing. And I remember as a kid, Boston was always the big race anyway. I mean, I knew of it because as a kid, when I enjoyed sort of running the mile at school and ran cross country in middle school, then cross country in high school. And I remember I'd get up every March and watch the LA Marathon because I was just in awe of these runners who can run 26.2 miles. I can only run 2 miles or 3 miles or whatever it was at the time. And I would just watch them in amazement at how these guys can do it. And I grew up Catholic, and I knew a priest at our parish, and he was a runner, and a very good runner at that. His name was Father George. Well, Father George ran Boston one year, and he told me about it, and he said, hey, I'm going to do Boston. I think this was 92 or 93 that he was going to run Boston. I think it was 93. And he ended up, he did it, did pretty well. I can't remember his time, but I know I think he was pleased with his performance. He brought me back a t-shirt, a Boston Marathon t-shirt. And I thought, wow, that was so cool. And so he gave me this t-shirt. And of course at track practice, I proudly wore it. Hey, look at this, guys. I have a Boston Marathon t-shirt. Do you guys have this? I didn't say that, but I was thinking it and I would proudly wear it. Hey, I got this Boston Marathon shirt. Look at me. I'm the hotshot. But that was my experience with Boston Marathon as a kid, which was knowing a priest who was kind enough to bring me back a t-shirt. And I just remember thinking, wow, that's so great. He ran Boston. I could just never do a marathon. I could never run that far. I mean, I'm good at, I mean, I'm okay, I guess, at 3 miles or so for high school cross country, and I can do the mile and 2 mile in track and field. But the marathon, oh boy, could never do that. And then I did it. And I did the LA Marathon, and after watching those guys, and I did Boston, and now I'm coming back. So I'm very excited about that. You guys should be too if it's your first time. I mean, just really soak in the atmosphere, soak in the expo. If you're going for your Abbott Six Star, it's just what a phenomenal experience it is. You guys are just going to love it. And hopefully I'm getting you guys who haven't run Boston, getting you excited about hitting that BQ. So if you want to run Boston, look up the qualifying times and find a good marathon in your local area or anywhere else that is a Boston qualifier, and get out there and do it and go out and run that race. And so now that we've talked about Boston, hopefully I got you guys excited about that. I'm going to get into, because it's 2 weeks now, so I'm going to start the taper pretty soon. I have one more 20-miler I'm going to get in. Then we're going to get into taper time. And then in a couple podcasts, I'm going to have a recap of my second Boston Marathon experience for you guys. But one of the things that leading up to marathon training is getting that mileage in. And you know how serious and quite frankly anal we runners, distance runners, can be about getting our mileage in. I mean, we'll go through all kinds of things to make sure we can get a run in. And this training cycle, there was a couple times I had to run twice in a day, which I normally don't do. And I don't do that only because of time. I just don't have the time necessarily to really do that. But I had to make the time on two separate occasions because it just wasn't going to work out where the next day I just wasn't able to run for whatever reason. I don't know if it was work-related or other things. So I had to do that twice. But I remember in the past, in 2017, I had an out-of-town work trip. And I was in Central California. And it was really hot. It was June. And it was exceptionally hot. I mean, 100-plus degrees during the day. So we would get done and go back to the motel. I think it was Motel 6. It was. So, yes, it was fancy living at Motel 6. But we were there. And it was like 4 or 5 o'clock, and it was still like 100 degrees, and I was like, I just can't run. I can't. Now, it was June 2017. I had Berlin in late September. So, you know, if I didn't run for a couple days, no big deal. But I thought, no, I have Berlin coming up, and I don't know if you guys just heard one of my cats. If you remember an earlier podcast, this is actually a different cat. So, anyway. And he just ate, too. But so I figured, you know, it was a few months out, but I said, you know, I have to get the mileage in. I really, really want to run well. But it's 100 degrees out. I can't run now. There's no way. So I ended up going to bed early and getting up at like 2:30 in the morning. And running in a strange area. I mean, I'm not from this area. So I don't know anything about it. But I looked on my smartphone, looked at little routes in the little neighborhood nearby, and said, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to wake up at 2:30. It's not going to be as hot, obviously, and I'm going to get this mileage. And I did that twice, back-to-back days. And I ran, you know, 7-8 miles, I think, each day. It was extremely humid, and I remember just being drenched in sweat after the run because it was so humid. And it was warm. I think it was in the 70s at the time, at night, you know, or in early morning, really. So, I mean, I was out of town and decided I'm going to wake up at 2:30 in the morning in a strange town I've never been in, have no idea how safe any of this is. I look safe. Let me just do it anyway. So, and I'm sure you guys probably have similar stories too, being in strange areas you don't know anything about, but getting those runs in anyway. And, you know, that's just some of the things we do. And we rearrange our schedules to get runs in, and we plan weekends around getting runs in. And I know when you have long runs during your marathon training cycle, okay, well, can I really go out and socialize on Saturday night? I got Sunday morning, I got to do, you know, 18, 19 miles, 20 miles. So I guess I have to not do that. And so you're giving up opportunities out there. And so you are making decisions to prioritize running over social aspects of your life or other things. And in the end, is it really worth it? Well, for me, yes. Hopefully for you too, which is why you do it. So, I don't know. It's really interesting to me how just some of the things that we do out there to get the mileage in, running in strange areas at 3 in the morning I mean, and I've gotten up early here, at home too, at 3 in the morning. And I've run at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning here. I've run at 10, 11 at night as well. And I'm sure some of you guys have too. And that's kind of an odd time to run during the week or Friday night, 10, 11 o'clock. I mean, who does that? Friday night, you're running at like 10 o'clock, really? Yeah, because I just had things going on, but I needed to get the mileage in. So that's what I did. That's an interesting thing too, is running at 10, 11 at night, especially on the weekend. You got to be careful because of cars running out. Cars aren't expecting to see runners at 10, 11 at night. So you got to be very careful where you run, especially if it's a weekend night. Some people might have had a few drinks or so. So that's always an issue as well. But that's just kind of what you do as a competitive amateur runner. You'll just go out at crazy times and get the mileage in. And that's what you have to do. Again, we're not professionals, so we don't have a training schedule, a coach, and this isn't our full-time job where we can just run whenever that you throughout the day. I can't do that. I work during the week. I can't decide I want to run at 10 in the morning every day. It's not going to happen. So I have to make decisions. And then if you have other obligations, family obligations, or anything else that you have to do, and you also have the home stress. And I know I mentioned that briefly earlier in this podcast. Home stress. And what I mean by home stress is not your spouse or your children or your pets or whoever bothering you, but you have obligations at home, cleaning the house, groceries, taking, if you have kids, they have obligations themselves. Maybe they're in sports. Maybe they have to be picked up, dropped off at school, concerts, recitals, whatever. And all that can be overwhelming for someone if you have constant things to do because you get tired and you just want to relax, but you can't relax because you have all these things to take care of at home. And that's just part of life. That's just how life is, and you accept it. And it's, in the end, not that big of a deal. But how do you get that mileage in? And sometimes you just have to be creative. So you have to run twice during a day if you can squeeze it in, or you have to run at 10, 11 at night and just kind of sacrifice. Oh, you know what? I guess I can't go and go out and hang out with friends, or I can't do this and that because I have to go run. Or maybe you sacrifice a little bit of sleep and say, well, you know what? I can kind of tough the day out tomorrow because I really have to get this mileage in. Another alternative too is sometimes you have to split up the miles. Well, I wanted to run 10 miles and 10 miles, but I'm going to have to stretch, in 2 days, 20 miles in 2 days, but I'm going to have to stretch that out now, make it 3 days and 20 miles. And so you're always kind of you always have to make adjustments. That's what differentiates us from the professionals. Professionals don't have to worry about that. That's their job. But we have all kinds of things going on in our lives. So basically, give yourself a pat on the back. You're doing it right. For you guys to run as well as you're running and as successful as you've been when you're just an amateur and you really have no real reason to run other than your own personal ambitions and your own personal drive, it takes a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice. And you should be proud of that. You really should. Okay, well, I hope that was somewhat motivating. Hopefully, it got you guys excited about going out and running during this week. So, if you have Boston coming up in 2 weeks, start to taper now. Don't burn yourself out. So, that's it. Thank you for listening to episode 4, episode 5 coming hopefully very soon, hopefully right before Boston. I'm going to get into the Boston Marathon again next podcast, and we're going to have another great discussion about marathon tapering and how we can run Boston effectively again. All right, thank you for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.